By the way, do you have a schedule for me as well?
Nope. No. You're not getting it.
You can have the old non-pro one.
The old one you can get.
You're so nice to me.
The iSpot is the podcast about polar science and the people.
We talked to scientists who went on board Polarstern, the German research icebreaker, for the biggest research expedition in the Arctic.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of The iSpot, the podcast about polar science and the people. My name is Kirstin Werner and I'm here with my colleague Sarah Pascaletto. Sarah,
hello.
How are you?
I'm freaking out. I'm excited.
Finally, we have our first episode.
Yes. Yes. It's been
iceberg.
A long journey.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we are here today with Thomas Racco.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, who just came back from the Arctic.
Yeah, that's true. Thomas, thanks for having me here.
Yes. Thomas Racco is a climate scientist at the Alfred Wegener Institute, and he joined the Mosaic School as a lecturer for climate and sea ice modeling. Sarah, what is the Mosaic School?
So the Mosaic School was a summer school organized by APEX, the Association for Early Career Polar Science.
Polar Early Career.
APEX, of course. Acronyms, right? With the support of the Europolar Prediction, which is the project we are working with. And it was supporting Polarstern during the first 6 weeks of the whole Mosaic project. There were lectures going on the separate icebreaker Academic Federov that was helping with logistics and
exactly.
stuff, and was hosting this yes. Mosaic School.
So Academic Federov, this Russian icebreaker, actually supported Polarstern going into the sea ice.
Yeah.
And there were about 20 early career scientists on board together mm-hmm. with the lecturer. So Thomas was
the
one of them.
The other Thomases.
Thomas yeah. Racco, yeah. And there's other Thomases as well.
There were
on
a bunch
board.
Of Thomases yeah. on the ship. Yeah.
Yes. And so these people who were on the ship, they actually helped setting up this distributed network
yes.
of instruments that was
this
put
huge village
around Polarstern on the ice floe, and that will be serving as the base for all the measurements that will be taken during polar night now, because it's getting dark now in the Arctic.
Yeah, and this is going to be there for a whole year. So the help that the Mosaic School and the people on board the Academic Federal provided was very important, because this is going to have to stay there for quite a long time. So they needed help, and this is what people on the Academic Federov and the Mosaic School helped with.
Exactly. So, Thomas.
Yeah.
Have you been seasick?
That's what we've been all asking.
That's your first
about.
Question.
Yes.
That's a nice start. No, in fact, I haven't been really seasick. So, of course, when the waves were, I think we have had like 3 or 6 meter waves at some point. So I started to feel a little funny. Yeah, so I can say that. But I wasn't really seasick.
Did you use those bands I told you?
Yeah, you suggested
the
to have these wristbands. So I had those and they helped very nicely.
Okay.
I think.
You didn't need any patch or something?
No, I didn't. So I was very happy and But of course there was a bunch of people who struggled a lot, and you feel very sorry for them at some point.
But you just said, I have these armbands, I'm good. But you're not.
No, but as I said, like the first 1 or 2 days, I also felt that it's strange. And then I think it also, when you think about it and think, oh, now it could start, then this messes with your head kind of. And then, it got better and better.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And how are you in general?
How I am.
So you came back.
I'm
you
a
came,
nice person.
You came back from the Arctic. That was 28th of October. That is just a couple of days ago.
Yes, right. So
yes.
It's still quite fresh on my mind. Mm-hmm. And so being back is not that easy, I would say. So it's really, I found a lot of new friends, and it was this amazing experience. And I also learned something about myself. So, I mean, it's an amazing experience on
what
many
levels.
What
did you learn about yourself?
For example, then, you are in situations where you have never been in before, and then how you react to this. I think I learned that if you stay relaxed, then it will work out, kind of. So you don't need to freak out when something goes wrong. You really need to improvise a lot. Also learned that because, mm-hmm. I mean, for Mosaic, I think there was 8 years of planning involved.
Wow, and that's a lot, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah, and in the end, you end up with a map on a napkin on the ice. And that's it. So, but I mean, it worked out nicely. As far as I know, all the instruments are working. Yeah.
Did you see your first polar bear?
Oh, yeah, I did. So there was also quite a nice story because it was evening and I was sitting in the social room. And then, it was a Russian icebreaker, and then a Russian crew member came to me and said, "Hey, Thomas, come with me. There are polar bears outside." And then we went outside, and there was Mama Bear and her cub. So we were very close to the ship. And it was closer than in the normal zoo. Or so it was very, very close, and you could watch them. And it was also a bit, I was surprised by how close they were. So they were not really afraid of the ship. That's, of course, not... That's not optimal because they should be a little afraid. Mm. And then I think they even slept there next to the ship overnight. But when we were on the ice, we never experienced any, so there were never any polar bears very close to us.
That was good.
Yeah, that was good. It was just this one evening and then the day after where we saw polar bears.
Mm-hmm. And you did make nice photos, I guess.
Yeah, photos and videos, of course.
Cool.
Yeah.
We might... share some on our Instagram account at Prediction, huh?
Exactly. So
yeah, of course.
Now that you're back and we can have materials on our hands, because of course internet connection did not allow that for while you were on. So we're gonna post some nice pictures from now on. So check at Polar Prediction on Instagram.
And so you brought some recording of the sea ice.
Yeah.
With you.
Yeah, I did. So so it's not my personal recording. So it's from Robbie. He was a participant also of the summer school. Mm-hmm. And but he said we are allowed to use it here. And it's, of course, a very nice recording. So we all experienced this sound, but he recorded it. So I'm quite happy that we can show this because or maybe we just listen
to
it.
Shall we listen to it first?
Yes, sure. Okay.
So what you can hear is the ice really very close to the, it's hitting the ship's hull and scraping along the ship's hull.
So that sound that we just heard was the contact.
Yeah, so this is from the inside of the ship in the cabin. So it was really, really loud. And it also sounded like the metal was kind of bending or so. It's, of course, not happening, right? But but it sounds kind of like that.
Isn't it super scary?
It's like, kind of scary, but I mean, this ship was built for that. It's a very good ship.
Uh-huh.
It's a Russian ship. I mean, they know how to do that.
Yeah, right. But like, on a scale from 1 to 10, how loud was it? Was it like crazy loud or was
10 being?
10 being super loud.
Super loud. Yeah. Then it's 6, 7 maybe.
Okay, it's pretty loud.
It's very loud. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Was it the whole time? Do you get used to it? Or like sometimes you
No, then sometimes it's very, very loud and then it gets less loud when you, for example, usually the ship tries to be in an open lead, so where there's no ice, then it just takes less fuel and you're faster. But sometimes you really need to break the ice and go through thicker ice.
Yeah.
And then it sounds like this.
Wow.
And how did it feel when you put your first step on the sea ice? Because you're a sea ice modeler, right?
Yeah, I'm sea ice ocean atmosphere coupled modeler, more or less. But sea ice is, of course, a very important component of this. And also in my work, I study sea ice quite a lot. So really seeing this with my own eyes was amazing because, there are all these... I mean, even before we set foot on the ice, you saw all these different types of ice. it's amazing. So it's not like in the models that we are using, but on the sub-kilometer or even smaller scale, it looks, it's amazing, all these forms. You see these snow flowers, for example, which look like small flowers on the ice. Mm-hmm. Then there's pancake ice. And yeah, it's very different forms of ice. And very interesting. Never gets old. So I could really look at the ice for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. What was your favorite kind? Did you make a list of your favorites and then say, yeah?
Like a ranking?
Yeah.
I think in my top five, it's probably pancake ice. That's quite high.
Also the name, it's super cool.
It's also the name is nice. Ice. Yeah. And then there's this, I think it's grease ice. So it looks like it's oily water. So it's a very thin layer, but it's still, you can see the waves from the ship propagating through the ice. So it looks kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And you actually brought some music?
Yeah, I did.
You? And you?
Yeah, so I brought...
told me it reminds you of sea ice, yeah?
Yeah, so it reminds me not just of sea ice, but it reminds me also... of the moment, like it sounds like going into an adventure and then sea ice coming and seeing sea ice for the first time. And I think this song fits this quite well.
Okay. So
is it like the soundtrack of your movie, if you were to shoot a movie of you in the Arctic? This would be the first one.
Yeah, I think so. I have a lot of movies, of course, that I did and videos. So I will cut these together and I think this might be the background music.
Nice.
So
we listen to that now. It's the cinematic orchestra, Arrival of the Birds and Transformation.
So we're back. Thomas, that was very, very nice. So I could also get the feeling of like...
You can almost picture it, right?
Yes, I can picture like you stepping out and just setting foot on the ice and just like, you know, being surrounded by magnificent panoramas and stuff. That's really cool. So we're now going to dig a little bit more deep, let's say, and talk about what was your experience and how that plays out into like the rest of your life, right? So also like as an experience in and of itself, not just the scientific one, but also very personal one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you said before you are a modeler.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So what do you do on your daily basis? You just...
I mean, on my daily basis, I work with computer codes, I would say.
Yeah.
So I'm not just using them, but also writing them and then simulating some aspects of climate and ocean ice atmosphere interaction, you could say. So really simulating it on the computer and then comparing to observations.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we are confident that our model is working nicely, then we also perform forecasts or... You use the term projection, so longer term forecast until the end of the century, for example, and then you get an idea how the climate will evolve and how the sea ice in the Arctic and the Antarctic, for example, will evolve over this time period.
Yeah, and so you don't necessarily need to see where these data come from, right? Like you don't need to go to the Arctic to collect this data necessarily.
Yeah, not necessarily, of
just
course.
Staying in the office all day.
Yeah, right. Of course we need the data, of course, but it's, I need to say, having been there, it's also very very humbling experience, because you really get a feeling how difficult it is to get the data. And
yeah,
it's a major effort really to go there to get all these instruments on the ice, also safely, that no one is harmed.
Mm-hmm.
And also under these conditions, because it's, I mean, it gets very, very cold. And when there's, we had a very nice, calm and not too windy weather.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not all the time like this. So you can have very, very severe conditions, of course. And then it's really, really hard to get this data, especially when it's like, for example, minus 35 degrees wind chill. You really feel this on your skin. So I also experienced that. And if you have to be for many hours on the ice, then it's quite hard. You really feel like the energy sucked out of your body. And then, of course, being in the office is also a hard job. It can be hard, but it's very, very different. It was also, for me, a very nice experience to do this manual work for once.
And just for whoever is listening, this was your first time ever being on the field. So doing that work that leads then for you to have this data on your daily basis.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That was the first time.
Is that how you pictured it? Like when you're there on the office and like working on the data, like, oh, come on, these guys are just having fun with polar bears, like, and just, you know.
No, I think you cannot really picture this until you are really, really there. So it's a really, I don't know. I like the words maybe, but it's a really awesome experience and looks great because, so when we were there, it was a very nice time because we still had some light. So it wasn't polar night yet.
Yeah.
So even when I think it was the 9th of October or so, or the 10th, when the sun didn't rise anymore over the horizon, but still it was it was very close to the under the horizon.
Yeah.
So you still get some light because it's scattered, of course, and then it looks really nice. It has very nice color. So then you have this yellowish, reddish strip of light along the horizon for many hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then, it looks just great on the ice.
Cool. Did you also see the polar lights?
Yeah, we did.
The northern lights? Yeah.
Yeah, the northern lights, right.
What color were there?
So it's greenish, of course, but it's not like you see this on the photos. So if you take a photo of it, it's very, very green on the screen, and it can be reddish as well, and also violet, kind of. So we also saw that. But even nicer for me than the colors, I think it's how they move. It looks really, so at some point, we were still in the Arctic, so it was just ocean all around us, and we were basically under the polar lights, or the northern lights. So it looked like, you can say, maybe curtains in the wind, so moving really fast.
Really?
So, it's,
yeah.
So it's not slow, okay. It's really a fast movement, and they're... Yeah, it looks really great.
Nice.
I think I've never seen anything like that on the night sky. So
see, I always thought they were like the videos that I saw of Northern Lights. I thought they were always like time lapse, right?
So yeah, it looks like a time lapse, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So I was surprised because it's very fast movement and it looks like these pulses of energy or so.
Mm-hmm.
it looks really great.
Nice.
Mm.
And so. So you were on Academic Fedorov, as we said, and you guys were helping out with setting then also this distributed network, right?
Yes, right.
How were you involved in that?
Like, what actually did you do there?
Yes.
Can you tell a bit?
Yeah, can you tell like a number of instruments that you were setting up and just put your marks
Yeah,
on?
Let's see. So I was quite surprised because I was very involved in this. And maybe more involved than I thought before, because at first I thought I will give a lecture on the ship and doing more more work inside or coordination, helping with the coordination in fact of the school, but then in the end I was I think the name was ice manager on the ice
or
load manager.
Sounds important.
yeah,
it's kind of it's you're a responsible person then. So you get also a radio, or how do you say, walkie-talkie, a radio.
Okay.
And just stay in contact with the bridge and the responsible person for the cargo operations on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to, and basically, so often I was one of the first persons to be on the ice for these L sites. So L sites are the larger sites that we set up.
So L stands for large.
Large, yeah, L like large.
Okay, and then so these were really big sites. How big were they? What does large mean?
So it's several hundred meters to kilometer size.
Okay.
Something like that, yeah. So the flows, I think the L1 site was something like, so we worked in a radius of some hundred meters from the ship.
Okay.
Yeah. And so then you... what I needed to do was really to welcome all the instruments and the big 11-foot containers, so like these big containers that you have on ships on the ice. So there was, of course, the first time I did this, it was also quite scary because I saw. So they measured the ice thickness, and I expected maybe something like a meter or so when you put a very big container on the ice, but then it was more like 30, 50 centimeters maybe, or 30 centimeters.
The thickness of the ice.
Yeah, the ice.
So between the surface of the ice until
the ocean and the 4,000 meters of ocean below. It's just 30 centimeters.
30 centimeters, that's, yeah.
That's what holds you from
I mean, it's the minimum, I think. And I think we were looking for something more like 50 plus. And then in the end, I mean, yeah. So we welcomed this container on the ice. And then I was told when there might be a crack developing. So
What does it mean, welcome the container? I mean, you were
I don't know how to phrase this better, but you stay there on the ice, yes. And you, so this you're in contact with the crane operator, so they
the one that actually puts the container on the ice.
In contact with them. You give them signs with your hands whether they should stop or going up and down, so you do this, okay. Like pointing up, then it's and turning your hand, then it's going up. And if you point downwards, then the container needs to go down.
Yeah.
So they were looking at me. And then when the container's on the ice, and luckily there were no cracks developing.
Okay.
So then you need to unsling everything from the crane. Mm-hmm. So like these slings, and then, that's
Did
what you need to
do. Did you have a team around you
working
on this?
Yeah, usually because I was involved with the mosaic school, so I used the chance to get also students with me on the ice. So I usually had a small team with me, like 4 or 5 students, and then we turned so that everyone had the chance more or less to help me.
And then
you have a bunch of instruments and boxes and packages on the ice, and then you need of course to decide where these need to go. When you're lucky, you have a color coded box, and if you don't, then you need to think
and figure out
where it needs to go, okay. Because there were these different sites, and we had some priority list on a napkin again.
Were you really going out with this like sheets?
Yeah, I
of
did,
paper?
And also yeah, it was yeah. It's really amazing that you have all these years of planning, but in the end, I think I quickly scribbled something on a piece of paper to have some idea what needs to go out first, because so you have to imagine some people need, for example, 8 hours of work on the ice without a break.
Mm-hmm. Wow!
It's really if you start the process of setting this instrument up, you cannot stop it. So if you stop it, then for example, when you need to go back because of winds or so, then this is really not optimal. And then you might lose the instrument. So for some people, it was important to get the instruments or the boxes and everything first on the ice. And I was trying to make sure that they received their boxes first.
Mm-hmm. And had priority. Then.
They had priority, yeah. Right.
What was the coolest thing you had to do on ice? So outside the vessel. So maybe like coordinating this thing.
I think, yeah, for me, but I said that already, for me it was to be in contact with the bridge and the crane operator to give them signs and where to put everything. That was for me the coolest. Also using the radio while doing that, so that it looks really legit. And
you're like the boss and just managing everything that's going on. You just ask this guy.
I got a lot of photos and videos of that. So it's, I enjoyed that a lot, to be honest.
Do you feel like you know better now, like of how this whole process chain now works, like how this also data comes to you?
Yeah, I know much better now, I think. Yeah, so then really this will help me also to, as I said, it's for me it was a good experience to acknowledge or to appreciate this data that we are using. It's not clear that you have something like that. It's really a major effort to get it, and
nice.
And in the end, I mean, we set in total, I think we set 3 of these larger sites up, so L1, L2 and L3.
Okay.
And for L2 and L3 it was quite smooth already, so we learned a lot during the first setup.
Yeah.
And get to know each other. So I was also yelled at some point over the radio, but I mean,
what are you doing?
But you learn from your mistakes, of course, and then for 2 and 3 it was quite smooth, I think, and everyone was happy.
Fell in place.
Yeah.
Nice. And now we have another piece of music, and this is a particularly special one, right? This is something that you recorded while you were there, right?
Yes, right.
So you had leisure time. There were a lot of artsy people especially. And you recorded Little Black Submarines.
Yeah, it's a very nice song, I think. So I would like to say we did this with two guitars. And so I'm singing there, and also my I would say friend now, but also colleague Daniel Watkins from Oregon State University. He's also singing, playing the second guitar. Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Okay.
All right.
We are back with Thomas Racco in the studio of Radio Visa.
Thomas Racco, the guitarist and dancer and ukuleleist.
That was pretty amazing.
That was really cool.
Oh, thank you.
And for those
Dankeschön.
Of you who just switched on the radio, you're listening to The iSpot, the podcast about polar science and the people.
Yes.
So, Thomas, before the music, you told us about you being the ice manager on the ice, or what did you call it, the load manager?
Yeah, so there were different names for me.
Okay.
Usually over the radio, they said loading Thomas.
Okay.
because you were like 15 Thomases.
There were 15 Thomases, and there was also,
always a Thomas.
There's always a Thomas around you. Just watch for that.
But our cruise leader, he was also, it's also Thomas Krumpen.
Okay.
Yeah. What was your favorite name that they called you?
So there was also T-Rex because of my last name. So they were very creative with finding nicknames for me.
T-Rex. Racco. Thomas Racco.
Yeah.
And they made a Rex out of it.
Yeah, like a dinosaur, you know, T-Rex. Yeah.
Because, the leader of the whole mosaic is Marcus Rex.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they're not this Rex, like R-A-C-K-S, like my last name. Yeah. So I like that a lot.
So that's a nice one.
So I was actually wondering, how did you find that particular role to be the ice manager, T-Rex, whatever? because it's not, you go on the ship, you are the lecturer for the mosaic school.
Yeah.
But then eventually it turns out you're becoming the load manager.
Yeah, I think it's mysterious ways. I think, and on a ship being together for some weeks, and it took some time to be on the to reach the ice, right? So you have days where you find out what other people can do maybe, and what their skills are. So they were also very creative people, for example. And at some point, I think so I was approached by Jacob. So he was doing the cargo operations on the ship, and he said whether so he could see me doing this on the ice, and he just asked me. And of course I was super happy to do that,
because you wanted to go on the ice,
of course.
You weren't sure before if you at all can put a step on it, right?
It was not that clear before. And of course there was the hope for all of us, and also for the students, to be on the ice. And in the end they were all on the ice, of course, and also they had a major role also to put everything up. I think it was really a lot of help and a lot of support by them. So to be honest, I couldn't really imagine this being this smooth experience to set up the network without the students. I think also Thomas Krumpen, he also said they were the integrating part of the cruise. So, so that's of course a very nice way of phrasing it.
Yes. Yeah. Being grateful. Okay, so I was wondering, before you reached the ice, your academic Fedorov started about 20 hours later than Polarstern.
Yeah, there was some delay.
Leaving the Tromsø Harbor, there was some delay because I think there was some instrument not.
I think we were waiting for a package to be delivered.
Right.
Something.
Right. Yeah. And so Academic Fedorov had to wait while Polarstern already left Tromsø that evening on the 20th September.
Right.
And you left the next day. Mm-hmm. So, and then you. When did you first time see Polarstern again? Because, they were further gone already.
Polarstern was often on the horizon, so you could see the ship, and we were of course circling around because we were setting this network in a radius of 22, let's say, at the maximum 50 kilometers radius up. We were setting instruments up on the ice, and sometimes we occasionally could see Polarstern, and also from the helicopter, for example, you could see Polarstern. And
okay, wait. So once you reach the ice, you could see Polar Stern all the time on the horizon.
No, not right? all the time, but oh. but it happened. I mean, because Polar Stern was at first also there was in what was it? It was seismometers, I think, that they wanted to get first. Mm-hmm. So they took a slightly different course than we did. And at some point we so there was this rendezvous. Mm-hmm. With Polar Stern. Yes.
And there was a nice picture, I think also we posted it on Instagram, right? It got quite some likes, yes.
Okay.
The rendezvous, yes.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah. So yeah, so that was a very nice experience, of course, when Polar Stern so I was also outside, so luckily enough, so I could see Polar Stern coming from the horizon and getting closer and closer. And yeah, then at some point the ships, they were side by side. Mm-hmm. And then we so Polar Stern received some fuel from us.
Okay.
So there was a refueling. Mm-hmm. And also transfer of people. So mm-hmm. This it was quite funny. It's not that you just jump over or so, but this was done with a so-called mummy chair. So it looks like a bird cage maybe, and then people go inside and and then they hang on this crane, and then they're transferred back and forth.
So the mummy chair came from Polar Stern.
No, in fact, this mummy chair was on the Fedorov thing.
It was on the Fedorov.
Yeah.
And then it moved over to Polar Stern.
Yes, right.
Okay. And have you been in that mummy chair?
I've been in the mummy chair, but I have not been to Polar Stern.
Okay. But I was actually wondering, how was the communication between Akademik Fedorov and Polar Stern? Once on the transit into the ice, but then also while you were in the ice. How did that work?
Our cruise leader, and they were, of course, in contact with Polar Stern all the time and coordinating the next steps. So I was not really in some meetings I was also involved because as I said I was on the ice, so I got also some insight into how this worked, but of course there are also things happening in the background that you don't know about, but I know that they were always in contact.
Okay.
And I mean personally I was also so I received some mails from the meteorological office on Polar Stern, so they sent me some data for our weather forecast and our general meetings, so that we were on the same page, and then so we also got a weather forecast from Polar Stern.
Because on Polar Stern there's the German Weather Service, DWD.
Yes, correct.
I think two guys are there, right, taking care of the weather conditions, and you were in close contact with them.
Yes, right.
Okay, sounds...
And also on the way back, so Andreas Reke, he was with us. He's also from DWD, from the German Weather Service. And then he, so we got some data from Polar Stern also via email. And then he could use this data to come up with a nice forecast for how the waves and the swell and so on, how this will evolve on the way back to Tromsø.
Okay. On the ice, were there weather balloons?
So not started by us.
Not while you have been there.
No.
Yeah, okay,
but we, of course, we had some, there were instruments that can also profile the atmosphere just with a different technique. And
is that like an automatic weather station or what instruments were these?
Yeah, it looks like a weather station, which is quite sophisticated, I think. Mm-hmm. And there were many instruments on the ice also for profiling the ocean below the ice, because usually you know quite a lot. I mean, of course, not enough, but you already have some knowledge about how the atmospheric processes work. Mm. Yeah. But under the ice, I think this is more or less new, and it's also very interesting, of course, for my work. And so they were profiling the ocean and temperature, salinity, and things like that, and ocean currents under the ice. And you don't have a lot of data for that, of course, because satellites cannot really get this information. Or not yet, but they can't, and or they might, in fact, this expedition might also help to understand satellite data better, because there were also some instruments deployed that have similar instruments like there are on satellites, but close to the ground, of course. So you don't have these problems with clouds and all the radiation processes in the atmosphere, and then you get a better idea what it really is, what the satellites are seeing, and then you can better calibrate and validate what the satellites
see. So you're kind of ground truthing, right?
Yes,
you see what the satellite are measuring and then what the instruments down there measuring, and then you compare and see how it goes.
And this, of course, this could improve, for example, weather forecasts and so on immediately, because these satellite data, they feed into the weather forecast models. So if you understand the data better, of course, this could immediately lead to a better forecast. So this is also a very important component.
And very relevant for the year of polar prediction.
Yes,
that's exactly what the whole project is seeking then. And that's also why Mosaic is really fundamental for that, right?
Right.
And in the end, you had contact then with Polashtian people on the field. So while setting up stuff, or were just mainly Academic Fedorov guys?
So on the ice, it was really just us. So Polashtian was, at some point, they were concerned mostly with finding their flow, so the main central flow. It was not an easy task, not trivial, because the ice was just quite thin, so it wasn't easy. So we also were looking at some point for a nice flow, because at some point we were ahead of Polarstern, because Polarstern was trying to recover these seismometers. And so we were also testing some flows. And we were doing helicopter operations. So in fact, the people from the Arctic and Antarctic Research Institute in St. Petersburg, so it's a Russian institute, they were very, very helpful with that. So they did a lot of helicopter operations, going with a helicopter landing on potential ice flows, taking measurements and so on, and identifying probable candidates for the central flow. And but Polarstern was, of course, also looking independently, also for in a slightly different area for a flow. And then they found this very nice flow.
Who made the final decision that will be the ice flow? Do you know that?
I cannot say really, but I know that, I mean, this was up to people on Polarstern, of course, to decide. We were just supporting the decision and sending reports of what we were doing.
Also because you were going back soon after and they would have to stay there, so it makes sense that the decision was on them.
Yes, of course,
It was like, see you guys. The ice flow is maybe not the perfect one.
Yeah, but to my knowledge, so they also had these number of candidates, and I think we were... With the helicopter and so on, we were checking some of these flows. So I think that helped also to find the central flow.
But this was also, so satellite data was also taken for making the decision, right?
Yeah, I think the satellite data was in the end, it was instrumental to find it, because this flow, it has an area where there's very thick ice. So they called it the fortress, I think.
Okay.
So it looks very stable, and this will probably stay stable over the whole year, or at least
let's hope so.
That's the expectation. So it was a really nice find, and I think they did the right decision there.
The fortress,
yeah,
that's fortress. I don't know the word to describe that. It sounds like a very stable thing.
Yeah, it really stands out. So if you look at the satellite image, it looks really,
promising.
Majestic, maybe.
That's a nice
the word.
Yeah,
majestic.
Yeah.
So Thomas, you brought another nice song. You probably didn't know before you were on board. A Russian song. Do you want to say why did you choose that one?
Yeah. So it reminds me of these get-togethers that we had together with the Russian crew. It's called Batareka. Batareka, I think it's a battery.
Battery.
And it's about, I think it's about a relationship that is low on battery and it needs to be recharged. I mean, they like these sad songs, right? But it's very nice, and we sang this together, like the whole group, and also we tried to sing in Russian as well. So I think this was a nice, nice way to also connect and not be separated between the crew and the scientists.
Nice.
Okay,
let's hear it.
Listen to that.
Nice. Exotic. At least for me. I'm not used to...
I love this song.
I'm not used to Russian songs, so I just enjoyed it very much.
Yeah.
Do you know any lyrics from this song? Like...
Batterica.
Okay. way.
Oy, 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 oy. Batterika. So I can, I learned a lot of Russian on the ship, as you can imagine.
Well, it's a skill. You can put it on your CV. You're now like an A1 Russian.
Yeah, probably
person.
Not A1.
When you start, you're A1.
Yeah, but
that's
it's maybe.
My
yeah, I think it's not A1.
So did the crew talk to you in English at all? Or how did you communicate with the crew? How did that work?
So with the crew, mostly English and broken English.
Okay.
And hands and feet.
Okay, feet. Interesting.
Yeah, but it worked kind of. So they, so it was mostly that they tried to talk in English to us as well. And we, so also the students, they were quite motivated to learn some, or some of the students were motivated to learn Russian as well. So they had some nice phrases that they learned. And for example, when at some point we were at a floe and it was really rubbish ice. So it's not a professional term, but it was too thin and we couldn't stay there. So we needed to leave. And then we learned like what it's Blahoy Mieste, something like this place is not optimal.
But sounds like what it means.
Yeah.
I mean, it gives the idea.
Yeah. Something like that.
Not knowing Russian, at least.
We don't know what he's telling us now.
No. Trash on my dude.
That he's saying like really bad
Russian
words.
Listeners, just send us feedback, messages on Instagram, and just tell us what Thomas just said, because we have no clue. Okay. And so you told us about life or like your work outside the academic Fedorov, but inside... You were a different person. Yeah. You had a different role.
Instead, I had a different nickname.
Tell us more about this, please. Okay.
No, inside, of course, my role was to give the Year of Polar Prediction lecture about modeling.
Yes.
How did
that go? Were people excited about the Year of Polar Prediction? And watch what you answer.
Did they know already about the Year of Polar Prediction?
Yeah, some knew about the Polar Prediction, Year of Polar Prediction already. Mm-hmm. But I think, now they know quite well what we are doing.
Good. And did your job then.
I hope so. But I got some nice feedback for this. And at first, of course, I was also, it was a challenge because the ship was still moving quite a lot. So we were not yet in the ice, of course.
Okay.
So I was, trying to
to give your lecture while you were moving.
Yeah, I was moving, and the room was also not that spacious. So, it was a challenge, but it worked out more or less nicely, I think. And I also tried in the beginning. I mostly showed some animations and videos to get everyone on board. Let's say
excited,
and then the hard part and the theoretical
and
part
just to show that
came
this is
later.
Gonna be the cool lecture. Just
what
watch
was,
out.
What was the hard part then?
So I was talking about how you can predict drift trajectories. So I mean ice drift, but also if Polarstern freezes into the ice, then it will move with the ice. And if you want to predict where Polarstern is going, you need to know how you can predict the movement of ice, and that's with models, of course. And we were using a quite simple approach with the students, so they in the end they could come up with their own forecast for the next, let's say 2 or 3 days where Polarstern might go. And also all the instruments that we set up on the ice, we were also forecasting their position like 2 or 3 days ahead. Just using the available weather forecast data that we had, and also some YOP products that we had on board.
YOP stands for Year of Polar Prediction.
Year of Polar Prediction.
So, what products you're referring to?
So it was products from Environment Canada and from our colleagues from NOAA. It's all acronyms.
So products mean sea ice forecast.
Sea ice drift velocities and sea ice forecast, because they are really using coupled sea ice ocean atmosphere models. And so you can also use, of course, if you have sea ice drift or velocity information, so the information how the sea ice moves, then it's of course very easy to come up with a forecast for how Polarstern will move, because it will just follow this velocity field. But we did a simpler approach as well, where we just used forecasts for winds that we had and that we had available on the ship anyway, because we were presenting weather forecasts in the general meetings. So we had information for how the winds will evolve in our area. And so it's if you do the physics, then you can come up with an approach how to come up with an idea how the sea ice will move in relation to the winds.
So the wind is moving the sea ice?
Yes, the winds are moving the sea ice, and then there's some angle between how the ice moves and how the wind moves.
Okay.
So there's a very simple rule of thumb that apparently works quite well over short time scales, because our forecast was really not bad. So we compared it with the real drift, because so we did also reforecast, which means that do forecasts with only data that was available until some point in the past, and then you do a forecast like you would do now. Yeah. And for the past, it's, the nice thing is that you know what happened afterwards.
Yes.
And then you can compare immediately and then do a real forecast where you don't know yet how things will evolve.
Mm-hmm. And you were able to predict it accurately.
Yeah, I mean, accurately, of course, there was skill to our forecast, and it was helpful, I think, to know where all these, because we put a lot of instruments on the ice, and it's, of course, important to know where everything is. Also, when we try to make our way out of the ice, it was important not to destroy anything that we set up, right? Because it was many, many instruments, mm-hmm. also GPS buoys on the ice. So you don't want to go with your ship through a flow where these instruments are deployed. That's, of course, very, that's clear, right?
Mm-hmm. But so you said you used a simple approach of just taking the wind to forecast where the sea ice would move.
Yes, right.
But if you do a proper forecast, what other parameters would you use? Not only the wind.
Not only the wind, and then, for example, the friction with the ocean is important.
Friction with the ocean. Yeah, what does that mean?
That means when you have an ocean below the ice, it will be in contact, of course, with the ice. So if the ocean goes in one direction and the ice in another, it might slow the ice down and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then also you have internal forces in the ice, which are quite important. So you can imagine if you have converging winds, which means they are pointing to
towards the same direction
from like a circle, and then pointing to the same direction, then the ice will be piled up in the middle. And if you just assume that the sea ice is moving like the wind, then the ice will not slow down in the middle. Usually, I mean, in the real world, the ice would be piled up in the middle of the circle.
Making ridges
and rafting and so on. So this will happen in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you just assume that sea ice will move like the wind, then this will not happen. And then your forecast will be...
Right, because it just follows incorrect. The wind, and then it just goes on forever.
Yes, so the winds do not ridge, right?
Okay.
Not in this way.
Okay, now I have a clearer picture, I think, in my head.
And I mean, this rule of thumb in the end was something like we just assumed that the magnitude of the sea ice velocity is 2% of the wind speed. And then there's an angle of something like, I think, 22.5 degrees or so. That worked quite nicely.
Okay.
Okay, that's for the advanced ones.
That's for exactly. That's for the pros. For the others, if you didn't understand it, neither did I. Okay, so that's all cool.
Yeah, but we need to do some science here as well, right?
That's true. We have to keep a balance. We're not just chatting here. We're just delivering some cool data. But so like, and you were giving lectures to your students, so you were the knowledgeable one in the situation. Right?
I think so, yes. I was the knowledgeable.
You cannot.
That's why we sent him.
Exactly. So I need a strong yes to this answer.
Yeah, I was confused by the question. Of course, I know a lot about this.
Right? Okay.
Yeah.
And now this is just to build up this question. I'm sorry. I'm just making this more complicated maybe. But did you feel like a separation between like your role as a lecturer and then the students? Or was just like, We were a community, but then, you know, there were just these moments when you would just stand up and say, you know, guys, I've done this for a while. Maybe I have something to tell you. How was it?
I didn't really. Of course, I mean, when I gave the lecture, it was clear that I'm telling things. And
because you were standing up.
Yeah, I was standing up and I had to tell something about this. And I think they from the feedback that I got, I think they learned quite a lot. But of course, for the other days, I also learned from them, right? I mean, it's not like I'm that much more advanced with respect to that. It's just this one topic where I've, of course, I have more knowledge. But I mean, they were also doing their masters or they were very far in their PhD.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they are early career scientists or young scientists. So of course, you can, they know a lot about other things that I'm not really aware of, right? So it's not, I didn't feel the strong separation then.
Yeah. Yeah. But in the end, were you successful? So every student, every young scientist now on board can predict sea ice now? Would you say that?
That's maybe...
It's too much?
That's maybe too much to say.
That's optimistic. Yeah. Okay.
So it was still, of
but
course...
But they know how to do that.
Yeah, and they also know, in principle, where to look when they really want to do it.
Okay.
This program or this code that we developed together, it's also available online, so on GitHub. So want, everyone can use it.
We will make this link available then for the advanced one that we referred to before. Yeah.
Yes, of course.
And you are having fun then with these guys.
Yeah.
Because we have now, we're going to listen now to a very dear song to you that was representing a very special, very particular moment maybe on the cruise, right? Because this is kind of a disco, like or like a club song.
Yeah, it's a club song. Yeah, so of course we had these bar nights and there was also dancing involved at some point, and I liked the song quite a lot, and I think it was a very nice moment. I think many people enjoyed the song.
Now we're gonna listen to In My Mind.
Yeah.
The Year of Polar Prediction is an initiative of the World Meteorological Organization.
It is a 10-year program with the goal to improve weather and sea ice forecast in the Arctic and Antarctic.
The Year of Polar Prediction brings together the international science community with the national weather centers and those people who are actually using weather and sea ice forecast in their daily work and life.
MOSAIC is a huge international project coordinated by the German Alfred Wegener Institute for Polar and Marine Research.
For 1 year, from September 2019 to October 2020, Polarstern, the German research icebreaker, is frozen into the central Arctic sea ice. Around Polarstern, there is a distributed network of instruments set up of the surrounding sea ice flow.
These instruments on the ice provide a unique data set that never existed before. In particular, measurements will be taken during polar night.
These extra observations will cover all aspects in the Arctic, from the atmosphere through the sea ice and into the deep ocean.
These observations will improve our understanding of the changing Arctic climate and weather.
Based on this better understanding, models that forecast weather and sea ice in the Arctic can be improved, which is crucial for the Year of Polar Prediction.
Therefore, MOSAIC has been endorsed by the Year of Polar Prediction, as it will significantly contribute to making better weather and sea ice predictions for the Arctic.
Okay, we are back on the Ice Pod, the podcast about
polar science,
sea ice and the people. Polar science polar and the people. Yes.
Yes. It changes, it varies, it can be about a lot of things and the people.
And it's the official Year of Polar Prediction podcast.
Yes.
We didn't say that today.
No, but it's good to remind it.
Right.
We talked about the Year of Polar Prediction, but we forgot to mention why we're talking about it. And that's why this is the official podcast.
Yes. So, Thomas, we were talking before the music. We were talking about you being a lecturer on board the Academic Federov.
Yes.
Talking about the Year of Polar Prediction to many young scientist, but you did not only spend time there to work.
That's right. I mean, so we spent a lot of time with singing and making music or jamming, you could say. So there were also other people who brought a guitar, and there was also a guitar available from the Russian crew. So that was really nice, and we had a ukulele with us.
Can you play this?
I can play not as nicely as I can play guitar, but I can play some songs on the ukulele as well.
So what is the difference? It has more...
So it depends how you tune it. You can also tune it like it's just four strings of the six strings of the guitar. Then this is easier, but usually it's tuned differently. And then it's you need to, if you memorized, like, for example, chords on the guitar, then they are very different on the ukulele. Okay. So it's like learning
because it's much smaller, right?
It's also much smaller, but if you don't have these very big hands, then it fits quite nicely, and you can.
I have small
Kirsten
hands.
Kirsten just showed her hand.
Yeah, just say,
hello.
These are, I think, the smallest hands you can have.
We can make a competition.
I think they're perfect for ukulele playing.
So, but how many strings, you said, does your ukulele have?
Mine has four.
Four.
And I think all the ukuleles in the world, they have like four strings.
Four, but the guitar has six, right?
Yes, right.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. Wow, cool. But, okay, so
we did that, and then also, so the students, they were also working on their outreach products for YOP.
Yeah.
And so those were quite creative, and for some things they needed drawings. So I was also drawing on the ship, and I enjoyed that a lot because, I like to draw. I just don't find the time to do this very often, but on the ship I had some time to do that. So, for example, I also did a logo at some point for a website that might come up in the future. And so we also had a group of German and U.S. teachers on the ship.
Okay.
And they would produce material for schools. And I also helped there with... I sketched all the instruments that we put up on the ice. I sketched them on a tablet.
Okay.
So it looks like a cartoon now for all the instruments. And they might... I think they will use this for their materials. So that was also a lot of fun for me to do this again.
Yeah. But before all this, how did you get together? I mean, you were first, you spent some time in Tromsø, a couple of days there.
Yes, right.
Prepare for going on board.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to know each other already.
Yeah, during the dry days.
The dry days, they call it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to know each other, of course, and we had some events also in the evening, like barbecue and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that, of course, helps. But there was also already some program during the dry days. So we also had some lectures already.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lecture, I think, on, for example, on indigenous communities and knowledge in the Arctic.
Nice.
I think it was already on the first day.
Mm.
So we already had quite a lot of program also during the days in Tromsø, and also at some point that was, of course, very nice for all of us. So Markus Rex, also the lead of the Mosaic expedition, he also joined us and talked about the expedition and what lies ahead and how this will evolve for the next year. So he came to us and talked to us in private. That was also
he was
nice.
Probably pretty excited.
Yeah,
a couple
he was,
of days before.
Yeah, he couldn't.
Yeah. His big. Expedition
I think so.
Started.
Yeah, I think he was also quite, because it's many years of planning, and then it was so strange for him. He said, I think it was the day before, and he said, tomorrow it will start. So I think he also couldn't really believe it, but yeah.
I mean, it's his baby. Like, he'd really just developed the whole concept and, like, was really on top of making this happen.
Yes.
Cool.
Mm. Okay. And then you went on board?
Yeah, so we went on board. So up the gangway, of course.
Yes. And we saw pictures from that.
Yes.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Then Thomas Krumpen, he was sitting in the mess hall, and he was,
waiting for you.
He took our passports away.
Oh, okay.
So then we knew, okay, now it starts. Yeah, now we're trapped here on the ship.
Serious now.
You don't get to get away.
So in fact, I had been on the Fedorov before when the ship was in Bremerhaven, so I already knew kind of how it looks like. So it wasn't
just
that
for
that
a visit. We went there.
But strangely, it looked very different, or it felt very different to be there in Tromsø. Mm-hmm. So, but at least I knew already where everything is and where the cabins are and how they might look like. So I had some expectation already. And but of course, for most of us, it was the first time being on the ship, and
there were not like a lot of space, right? You didn't have like 15 different rooms, meeting rooms, that you could just decide, okay, this is just going to be the playroom, this is going to be the lecture room. So how was... You were just gathering in this common areas, I expect?
Yeah, so we had, I mean, next to the mess hall, we had a social room. So there were a bunch of couches inside. And
is that also where you did the lecture?
No, this was like the room next to that, like the adjacent room.
Okay.
But in the social room, there was also the WhatsApp room at some point. So we had
WhatsApp room?
Yeah, we had a WhatsApp available at some point later during the cruise.
Uh-huh.
And then the room next to it was the lecture room. And during nights, it also became like our movie theater sometimes. Mm-hmm. So we had movie nights and
Russian
things
movies,
like that.
I guess?
No.
Okay.
You didn't make that step. You were not that into Russia.
Oh, you also had, I mean, there was some kind of Russian evening where we, mm-hmm. where they showed us some photos and pictures and also a Russian documentary. So that happened, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, we during these general meetings, we learned also Russian words. So there was always the word of the day. The Russian word of the day, and that was of course often very funny and very hard for us to remember, but in the end I think some words of course they stick with you, and then you can use them all the time. I think that
which
was a
one,
nice idea.
Which one did you remember? Which one?
I mean, you learn of course these basic things like thank you, spasiba, mm-hmm. or pozdravstvo, mm-hmm. for like you're welcome or something.
Okay.
And
What's the cutest, maybe? Like the one that sounds more like, oh my God.
I mean, the cutest might be, so if you want to order less food, you say something like chut chut.
Chut chut.
Chut chut. Yeah, chut chut.
But you never had to say that.
No, I never used it, in fact. No, I would. We also learned how you can say, please, I want to have a little more.
By the way, how was food aboard Akademik Fedorov?
Yeah, so it was very meat heavy.
Okay.
To be honest.
Proteins.
Proteins, and we had 4 meals per day.
Wow.
And did you have that kasha we talked about earlier?
Yeah.
How did you like it?
I think I liked it the first couple of weeks.
Okay.
And then
yeah, you don't sound super convinced right now when you're saying that.
And in the end, I didn't really eat it anymore, and then I sticked more or less. So there was also toast then in the morning.
Okay, so there was an alternative for breakfast.
Just to mm-hmm. remind myself, what was this kasha all about? Is it...
Yes, I think it's some kind of...
It's buckwheat.
Yeah, oh, yeah, this buckwheat.
Right, like in like this oatmeal.
Oatmeal, is it
type.
With water or with
porridge looking?
Is it with water or with milk? Buckwheat.
We also had different versions of that. So I think they were definitely with milk also, but maybe also sometimes with water. So they were slightly different.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah, and otherwise food. I mean, there was a vegetarian option as well, and that you could go for. But my Russian colleagues, they really strongly suggested in the beginning that this might be just
potatoes
all the time. So I didn't really opt for this choice. That was really strange, because I mean, the months before I was living mostly vegetarian, and so this on the ship was like falling back to old behavior. But yeah, now that I'm back, I'm trying to make up for this.
Was there anything you were missing, really, like food-wise, or like something that, I would really like to have this now, but I can't because I'm on a ship in the middle of the Arctic.
Yeah, so next time I think I will probably take more salty things with me, like chips,
mm-hmm.
or
crisps,
yeah, or
crackers.
tacos
Oh, I think we have to get him
a peanut
bunch of, right?
Also, also because it's like 2:30 now when we're recording it, and I didn't eat, so
we didn't have lunch today. Yes.
No, so all this talking with food.
Okay,
maybe
we stop talking about food now, but just listen to the next song. This is also a self-recorded song.
Mm-hmm.
If we were the vampires.
Yeah, if we were vampires.
And you did that together with...
Yeah, I did that with three, also friends, I would say now. So it's Chelsea Harvey. She's a journalist. She was also with us. She's from E&E News in New York. And then also Francesca Doglioni. She's
Doglioni. From
right. Oh, thank you.
Say it again, please, Sarah.
Doglioni.
Wow.
Yeah, she's from Italy and now at Avi as well. And there's also Marie-Lou Atanas. She's from Paris, from Lausanne. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we were singing the song together. So I'm also singing here. And yeah, let's maybe listen to it.
This is going to be a special one.
Listen to that.
That was beautiful. That was absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
Second career, you can... become a singer.
Exactly. If you know, somehow this doesn't work out. Yeah, I'm just going to be... Was it like a very special song? Why did you decide to sing this particular song?
Yeah, I think this song... I mean, at some point it says maybe we have 40 years together and one day you'll be gone and one day I'll be gone. And it kind of fits the time scale also for when sea ice will disappear. So it has also this other meaning to me. So... again, if you would look at pictures of sea ice or sea ice decreasing, maybe you started with thick sea ice like in the 60s or so, and then how it looks like sometimes at the same time in current years, then this might be a nice video video for this song.
Did you have many occasion where you could just like sing along and just, you know, enjoy your music spirits?
I mean, yes, I think at some point we did this almost every day.
Nice.
And met for at least some time, because there's a lot of time to spend on the ship, and also with limited internet access, it was quite interesting to see that people just naturally came up with ideas how to spend your time. So that, for example, we had self-defense classes and yoga courses in the morning.
Nice.
And we danced, and there was also a CrossFit organized every day. If you wanted to go, then there was
that's super. Wait, what is CrossFit? I don't know.
Isn't it like a super, oh god, I have the anstrengung now. It's like super tiring, like you're just working out like crazy and like doing the sequences super fast.
Yes,
and like
right, with no pauses in between. It's important not to stop.
Yeah. Did you lead that or who?
No,
did that?
I didn't. Oh god. No, it was one of, so it was Neil Allen. He's from ETH in Zurich. He was he was leading this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you get to do that often?
No, I also did it, but I mean, yeah, it almost kills you, right?
Yes. That's what I heard. I never tried it. I never could, maybe.
Yeah, but it gets better. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Was this mosaic thing in this mosaic school was a pretty powerful experience for you as a scientist?
Yes.
But have you ever, were you picturing this when you first decided, okay, this is going to be probably my career now? How this is going to play out? So
whether I thought about this in the past? Ending up on a ship in the Arctic Ocean? No, not really.
With this really big project too. Like, I mean, you go on the ship on the Arctic pretty regularly also with other project, but this is going to be pretty cool, like pretty big.
Yeah.
Than
of course,
cool.
I mean, when you start at Avi, when you start to work there, it's also it's in your contract.
It's an option.
You sign that it's always an option to go on an expedition. So it's, of course, it was always on my mind.
Mm.
But yeah, as I said, so I'm a modeler, right? So usually, you don't get the chance very often. And yeah, now I got the chance because they needed a model on the ship, and I think it's also good to have a model on the ship, to be honest.
We advocate more modelers to be on ships now.
Okay. How does this now will influence your future work as a modeler?
This experience on the ship?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's hard to say. So for sure, I mean, you kind of get the polar virus, so you want to go back at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So I would really like to go back, and I think I would still be there if it wasn't for my daughter at home. So I would have ever probably still be there if I could.
Yeah.
And
did you get the chance to present what you were doing at your daughter's kindergarten? We were talking about this in the trailer for those
yes.
who didn't listen to that yet.
So no, not yet. So this will, I think it's next week. So I will prepare mm-hmm. Some videos for the kids. Of course, something that's easier to understand. But I have some nice videos, I think, of the polar bears when we saw them, or maybe the photos of the northern lights and so mm-hmm. on, or being on the ice, or what this means. And also I got this plush toy from them. So it's
you made the selfie.
What
was it? What soft toy?
So it's
teddy bear, or?
And it's Rabe Socke.
Okay.
So I don't know how to translate this really, but
it's a bird.
Yeah, it's a bird.
But like the bird. Thing that you use.
Yeah, is it raven? Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of photos where he or she is on the ice or looking at the ice, and also being in the helicopter and so on. I took the
cool.
toy with me. So I hope they will like it.
They will like it.
I guess so.
I think they might be very proud.
If I can imagine myself in the kindergarten, that sounds to me like Mars. So they probably just say, "Oh my God, this is like
yeah." So apparently, not that I'm back, I also learned that this topic was, I think it was quite, this was quite aware to the kids. So they
okay,
were talking
mm-hmm.
about this, about Arctic and so on. They were talking about this. So I think it has some impact already.
Nice.
Maybe there's a group of small scientists.
But your daughter knows about what you're doing on the computer?
Yeah. So usually, of course, this was not the example. Usually, I think she thinks I'm just doing like this on my laptop all the time.
Like now you have to picture Thomas sitting in the computer.
Exactly. Maybe you
can hear
stuff.
He's actually working right now.
Okay.
And then looking intensely
looking
on the
us.
Screen.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think they already learned kind of that, for example, why it will be dark during winter, because of how the Earth and Sun are oriented. So I think they got this. So.
And just to ask you a random question, did you realize in kindergarten that you wanted to be a scientist? Were you always wanting to be a scientist? Or?
So I still can remember that in school, usually I knew what I didn't want to be in the future, because my
which
family...
Which is already a lot, I can assure you.
Yeah. So it was, yeah, I'm of course joking also, but usually I said I don't want to be a lawyer. So that's what my father
lawyer.
Does. Yeah, lawyer.
Okay.
So my whole family's into law.
Okay.
And I don't know why, but I knew that I wanted to do something else.
Mm-hmm. Which is
yeah.
fair.
Okay. Yeah. And at some point I know that I was thinking about studying art, in fact,
mm-hmm.
because I really like to draw, you
yeah.
know. And but then when I really needed to figure out what I want to study, then yeah, it became clear to me that something like math and physics, and I was also considering chemistry and these things, topics, so that this would be something like that. And then in the end I found this, I studied industrial math, or in German it's called Technomathematik, so which is a combination of math and physics and computer science. So that was perfect for me. So I didn't really have to decide at that point. And
yeah.
I learned like the best of all worlds.
It was still blurred enough that you could get a little bit of everything.
Yeah, but then in the end, we had this one seminar. It was in cooperation with AVI. And it was about a tsunami forecast for Indonesia.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And that was, I think, the moment where I thought it could, becoming a scientist could be an option, because before, studying math and physics, it was quite dry, of course, with all these equations and so on. I still enjoyed it, but I always liked it most when you could really translate this to something that works on the computer, and then
yes.
you got an image out of it, for example, or something like an animation where you could see how the wave of a tsunami, how this propagates towards the coast and how it gets piled up when it comes closer to the coast. Mm. So that really, I think that sparked my interest, and then there was the first connection to something like climate science or forecasting.
But sounds like a reasonable start.
It became only clear you would work in the polar regions when you applied at AVI, or?
Yeah. I think so. Mm. Of course, I think I can. It's fair to say that penguins, they were always my favorite animal.
And you did work on Antarctic topics, right?
Yeah, I'm working at the moment mostly on Antarctic topics. Mm. So also, we're working on this global climate model. So we're working on many key regions, of course. But at the moment, Antarctic. I have a kind of Antarctic focus at the moment.
So if you were not a scientist, what would you be? Would you be an art person, or would you be a musician, maybe?
Yeah. So
neither.
Maybe I would do something like illustrations for books or something like that. Uh-huh. And I still see this as an option. I mean, being on the ship, I also learned that I really enjoy to do this, and there might be more possibilities like this now in the after the cruise ended, because of all these outreach products that will be done.
Right.
For example, Tia, who will be here next time, right?
Tia Schneider.
Yes.
Yeah, she.
University of Potsdam.
Mm-hmm.
She is.
Yeah, right. She's also a YOP person.
Yeah, she was sponsored by. Yeah. The year
Team
Yop. Prediction. We're
doing this a lot on the ship.
The Team Yop. Yop.
Team Yop.
Okay.
And then we high-fived.
Very, very teamy.
I like that.
Yeah, and she has this photo exhibition planned.
Mm-hmm. Because she is a professional photographer, right?
Yes, right.
Yes.
And maybe I can, so we have some ideas how I can maybe contribute with some drawings or mm-hmm. So I really like this direction that this is taking, so I could see myself also like doing this,
getting more involved in this kind of projects too.
Yes, right.
Cool. Nice. And so now we have one other piece of music that you are proposing us, and that's Bellyache.
Yeah, it's Bellyache from Billie Eilish.
Billie Eilish.
It's a bit darker.
But I mean, the title itself,
it shows this because I have a nice memory connected to this, because I was playing it outside on the ship, so on the deck.
It was super dark, and it was super cold.
It was dark and super cold, so it was at night more or less, and so we sang this again together.
Okay.
And
let's hear Bellyache from Billie Eilish. We were chilling now in the studios of Radio Visa TV, and we kind of didn't realize that the song was ending. But that's all fine.
But we're still here with Thomas Rakow.
Yes.
And Thomas, if you put your name, or if I put your name into Google, mm-hmm. I find a lot about A68.
Oh,
How is this iceberg doing in the meantime? Is it still alive?
It's like, still just, alive, yeah.
Sorry, A68 is an iceberg. Right?
It's an iceberg that calved, I think, in 2017.
Okay.
June or July, I'm not sure anymore.
Don't ask us. You're the one that did a lot of studies with
it's
this.
It's in the Antarctic.
Antarctic, yeah, yes, we talked.
It calved from the Larsen Sea ice shelf.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so this happened when, at that time, a paper came out that I was authoring.
Was this just coincidence that your paper came out and this iceberg was calving?
Yeah, so my paper came out, and I mean, the iceberg, of course, it didn't decide then, okay, now it's a good time, so it's kind of coincidence.
Boom. Let's make it more spectacular and just crash in the ocean right now.
But then there was a press release, and Zina, she from AVI, she from the AVI...
The AVI media department.
Media department, yeah. She made sure that this is kind of connected, mm-hmm. because she expected, I think, a lot of attention to this carving, and then also my paper got a lot of attention due to this, because of course there were some statements in the paper that could be used also to get an idea where this iceberg might be going and how fast it might be going and so on.
And so in that paper, what did you do? So you were able to predict where the icebergs, different ice, different sized icebergs in the Antarctic would go, right?
Yeah, so basically we did something similar like we did for this mosaic school. So it was also a drift model, but a more sophisticated one, so with a real ocean sea ice model. And then what we did, we put satellite positions of, I think, 7,000 icebergs into the model that were really observed, like the real
icebergs.
Real icebergs.
Okay.
Like
7,000?
Yes, like, so that's just...
Who did that? Did you have an intern?
No, I mean, for the hard work?
I mean, it sounds amazing now, but it's not that... I mean, if you're modeling, you are used to work with big data sets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not... I mean, still a lot of icebergs, but the data set wasn't that big. So you just read this in your program and then...
So you didn't produce the data set on the icebergs, but it was there somewhere.
Yeah, this data set was produced by Christine Wesche from AVI, so
okay.
from
mm-hmm.
satellite data.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she worked with me then to get this into the computer model. And we had observed sizes of these icebergs and also their position. And then the model predicted where they might go over the course of, I think, 12 years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and after these 12 years, everything was more or less melted. So they drifted away from the coast, and then you could get an idea of the drift pattern. So, I mean, the spatial distribution of icebergs around Antarctica, and this kind of nicely fitted to satellite observations as well. And
So A68 was a really big iceberg.
A really big iceberg.
And it's now about 2 years old.
Yes, right.
And a half.
Yes, right.
Is it still alive?
It's still alive. So I haven't checked now for several weeks because I was kind of mm-hmm. occupied with other things.
But no.
But it hasn't drifted that far, so it's still kind of. I think it was, last time I checked, it was close to the tip of the Antarctic Peninsula, mm-hmm. so still
okay.
quite close to mm-hmm. Larsen Sea, where
and
it came from.
Did it diminish in size?
Yeah, so there were, for sure, there were, you could see smaller pieces breaking off,
mm-hmm.
but I think the main, it was still more or less intact, so you could, it was still a very massive
How big is
single
that?
Piece.
I'm not sure.
I think one direction was something like... I shouldn't have the number, but something like 70 kilometers.
Wow.
So it was really big. I think in our press release, we said something like it's seven times the size of Berlin, something like that.
Okay. Seven times the size
yeah.
of
wow.
Berlin?
I think if I remember
That's
correctly, I think
massive.
It was like that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really massive. It's a massive amount of water and fresh water. And in fact, if you compare it, I think the single iceberg contains as much ice that usually calves from the whole of Antarctica in a single year. So, I mean, for the whole continent, all icebergs together, usually, if you sum this up, it's like A68.
Wow.
For a single year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And ships that are now going around Antarctica,
yeah.
are they using your model to find out where they could go in
you
terms
mean,
of icebergs?
No, I mean, when you're on a ship, I mean, they have this, usually then it will be some ship that has an ice class, so they will
mm-hmm.
have an ice radar
mm-hmm.
On the bridge. But
they're not using any models?
No, I don't think so. They're not using models. So
mm-hmm.
I think they are using, so there's this iceberg database, and it's... satellite positions that you get from GPS positions that you get from satellite data for the major big icebergs, but these bigger ones, they're not really that dangerous to navigation or shipping. I would say it's more or less the smaller ones that
mm-hmm.
you can not that easily mm-hmm. spot from space.
Right.
So that's why you need this radar
mm-hmm.
On ships.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what's most important there.
But isn't that the whole idea, to improve forecast models, also sea
yes, of course.
Icebergs?
Yes, of course. I mean, there are these forecasts. Yeah, of course. There are also forecast models for icebergs, the operational models.
Mm-hmm.
And in this sense, I mean, this paper that we did, it could also help to get better forecast for these big icebergs. But it's basically you have an idea where it might be, but it's very slow, right? And an iceberg of this size, it doesn't do anything that's super surprising. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of guess. Yeah, you can
it's
kind of guess.
It's not going to jump in front of my
yes,
shoe.
Yes, right. And you, of course, the model does a decent job, but if you really want to know where it is, then doing this with satellite data or satellite imagery is, of course, the way to go if you're on a ship.
Mm-hmm. But you can transfer how you did it also for sea ice and also for maybe sea ice in the Arctic.
Yes, it's a very similar. Yeah. I mean, the equation, if you look at it, it's a very similar equation for ice and for sea ice and icebergs. And for icebergs, you can imagine there's just some additional things like, for example, because an iceberg has this very deep draft, there's a term in the equation that takes care of the fact that the ocean has a much bigger side, the ocean can much easier impact on an iceberg than on a thin sea ice flow, because it's just acting on the lower part on the ice and the form drag, so the drag that acts from the side, is much this process is much more important for an iceberg because it's so deeply embedded into the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this is.
It's because it's like an iceberg is vertical and an ice flow is like.
An ice flow is mostly. Yeah, it's very thin and it's more or less a 2D or a two dimensional
thing.
And right. An iceberg is more or less, you could say it's a 3D object, so it's really embedded into the ocean, and that's why the ocean has a stronger impact on icebergs.
So ocean is really your topic, right? The last paper I saw is all about.
I'm mostly working on the ocean part or the ocean sea ice interaction,
but and that's why you get that ocean team mosaic jacket, right?
Yeah.
What's the deal with this jacket? Let's open it up.
Yeah, I feel more connected to the team ocean, to be honest, because I mean the ocean, it covers also the 4,000 meters below the ice. And the sea ice is like the upper part of the ocean to me. So it's, of course, very relevant. But I like to see it as this interaction between ice and ocean. And that's why Team Ocean, I chose Team Ocean. I was also thinking to choose, maybe, because
people on Polarstern and the Arctic, they have like different uniforms. Let's say
they are producing jackets or T-shirts before they go on a cruise, right? Or
yes,
I mean, these teams,
they are not about which jacket you get, right? It's more, it's, more, it's also there's also something scientific behind in which group you are. So,
teams on board and they have their own jackets.
Yes, right.
To identify and who's on.
So
which
I was
team.
Basically part of the Mosaic School team. So, but there wasn't a jacket for that.
Okay.
So,
so you had to choose a jacket from another proper Mosaic science team.
A proper science team, yes, right. Because
we are not doing
that. Yeah, we cut that.
Or just clarify that we don't mean any diminishing thing
cut that. It's funny.
Okay, and you've chosen ocean, and some ocean, people think you are sea ice, right?
I mean,
this is the whole deal about it.
The section where I'm working at Arvi, we are developing this ocean sea ice model. Mm-hmm. So it's I've been working on ocean models all the years that I've been at Arvi, and also on sea ice. So it's just it feels like if I would just say I'm team sea ice, then I would just forget about this other part of me that really feels connected to ocean eddies and to deep water production.
Your heart is in the ocean.
Yes, of course.
Just this might help also those who don't necessarily agree with this interpretation to see your motivation behind this, because it was like not a drama, like this was a controversial issue at least for like a couple of seconds.
I see.
You don't know about this.
No, I don't know.
Maybe
about this.
You will find out. I'm just going to say this.
Right. Okay, you chose another last song. No, it's actually the last before the last song.
Second last?
The second last. Thank you. Here comes the sun. You have been in darkness for a while, and then you came back and saw the sun.
Yes, so on the way back, we were of course going to more lower latitudes again, and then at some point, so there was the sun again over the horizon, and there was a very, you can't really describe that. That when you're in darkness all the time, I mean, like really dark, and not a single a minute of daylight, then it really feels like you're coming back from space or something. And then seeing the sun was a really nice moment. It was also a calm day, and it looked very nice with the waves and everything. So I think we were all standing outside and just admiring how beautiful this this is. And I mean, usually you're just used to seeing the sun, but already after, I mean, it was just a couple of days or maybe a week or so without the sun. So yeah, you can imagine how this will be for the people on Polarstern now. It's quite tough, I think.
It's good to go back to the classics after this. I mean, we heard something very peculiar.
Because you really can hear the sun coming back, right?
Yeah, almost right.
I mean, it's cool. Nice. Yeah. Okay, so we are almost at the end of our very first episode of the iPod.
Sorry about the technical issues.
We are learning as you are. If there are any technical, also give us feedback if there was any problem, or like if you would like to adjust our format, email us.
Or
just have questions about anything. Thomas, us. We also have an email account, which is polarprediction@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are our channels where you can reach out to us. And before we leave, we wanted to give a shout out to two other podcasts that are doing something similar, or at least tackling similar topics. The first one is Arctic Drift. This is the official Mosaic podcast, right? It's an audio logbook. That's pretty much how I translated the German word that I saw that because, there.
Because it's a German podcast.
Yes.
And it's the weekly report. Mm-hmm. So usually Markus Rex, who is the chief scientist and leader of Mosaic, he talks about the past week in this podcast.
Yes.
And it's in German only. We don't know if it will be some point.
Might be.
But you can look at Arctic Drift. Or usually I type in Spotify Alfred Wegener Institute and then it comes up.
All right.
So
just check that out too. Because if you understand German, or if you're trying to learn it as myself, that's also a nice exercise. And you really are up to date with everything that is happening on the cruise right now.
On Polarstern.
Yes.
And then there's another really nice podcast I just found a few weeks ago. It's called Curiously Polar. And it's maintained by Chris Marquardt. And just recently they had Anja Sommerfeld, who is the project manager of Mosaic. Mm-hmm. She was talking in the podcast about Mosaic, about the planning and how they found the ice flow and things like that.
Also giving some updates then.
Really interesting. And they have every week, I think, they have another person featured there. So really cool. So Curiously Polar, find that on Spotify and probably also on other platforms.
Yes. Check them out. And now, to conclude,
we would like to thank Thomas so much for being here.
Yes,
for
thank
telling
you.
Us about his experience. We hope to see lots of pictures and videos now shared maybe on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. He has
an own Instagram account. It's Polar Thomas.
Right. Yeah. I might change this to Loading Thomas now.
I'm just saying, Polar Thomas has become like a symbol, I would say, of Mosaic. People really know you as Polar Thomas or
especially
you.
Especially my mom is following you, you know.
She is?
She is.
Oh, I'm honored.
Yeah.
Hello.
Listen to this podcast.
Shout out to Kirsten's mom.
Yeah. So and you are also on Twitter if people want to know more about. I think you're sharing your science work more on Twitter. This is then Thomas Racco.
Yes, right. With underscore in between.
Yeah. Okay.
Thomas
so
underscore.
You find Thomas there.
Yeah.
And we have a last question for you, Thomas.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And that will be, Sarah, you want to?
The most important question of all. So we are just going to, this is going to be a recurring thing, but you are the first one. So you get to start this thread, let's say, of very interesting questions. So if you were here next time we are recording the second episode, what would you like to ask our next guest on the ice pod?
And you don't know who's the next guest.
You don't know.
We still don't know who it will be. So.
Yeah, there is still like a margin.
I see. Let me think. I mean, since I was criticized so much for choosing the Team Ocean jacket, I might want to ask whether, why this person chose their jacket. So at least I think two reasons, nicely founded reasons. I think that's
like
appropriate.
Motivated.
Yeah. You cannot just choose a jacket, right? Really, no. Yeah.
We want graphs at least, like at least one graph with.
Well, let's hope this person has chosen a jacket at all.
Yeah. Yes, but you have to choose one, right? You said.
Do you have to take a jacket from?
No, you don't have to, but everyone does, I think, because it's.
Because it's given.
It's
right?
No one has this jacket. You need this mosaic jacket. You can buy it online.
You can buy it online.
I'm just kidding.
I wanted to get the CI team now.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much again, Thomas, for
thank
being
you
our
so much.
Yeah, and thank,
very first guest.
Thank you also for having me here. It was a lot of fun.
Yes. And we, the listener, we're going to see each other or like listen to each other next time with the next episode.
Next episode. There might be a trailer coming in between.
Stay tuned. And if you didn't do that already, subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, to the iSpot to get always the updates and when the next episode is coming out.
Yes. And you can also listen to us on Radio Besa TV.
Right.
Where we're actually producing this podcast.
Yes.
We're really grateful for Radio Besa TV having us here.
Yes.
Thank you so much. And this episode will be several times, at least a month.
So if you're from the Bremen or Bremerhaven area, just tune in on Radio Besa TV.
And
so.
We have a last song now, Thomas.
Yes.
You gave another last song. It's Linkin Park, The Little Things You Give Away, Give You Away.
Yeah, The Little Things Give You Away. So it's, I think if you ask fans, they're quite... Or they think this is after the events of Hurricane Katrina when this happened, and people felt a little bit left alone, also by the government and so on, and also that they felt that the government didn't really, I think it was still Bush, they didn't do enough about climate change and these things. So I think it's a nice song. It also has these kind of submarine ocean sounds in the beginning, which I really like. So maybe we can just listen to it.
Let's listen to that.
All
and
right.
Say
and
goodbye.
Goodbye to everyone.
Yeah, bye.
The iSpot is produced by the Year of Polar Prediction International Coordination Office.
With the technical support of Radio Besa TV.
As well as the support by the communication team of Mosaic and the Alfred Wegener Institute.
Editorial responsibility is with
Kirstin Werner and
Sara Pascoletto.
Our theme music is composed by Kevin MacLeod, available on incompetech.com.
For any questions, please contact us at polarprediction@gmail.com.
I might have recorded.
You will die if you put this on Instagram.